right. Well, you know what? Normally, you would hear the whistle blowing, and Too Short would say, hey, blow the whistle. But we don't need the whistle tonight because we have a very, very special guest in the Coach's Corner. I mean, this guy, he is just a phenomenal individual, was a standout athlete in multiple sports at Gilman High School, Princeton University. He was a delegate in the Maryland House, and he was also a representative of Maryland's congressional district, and, of course, the 60th governor of the state of Maryland. He is my good friend, my favorite politician of all time, Governor Robert Ehrlich. Governor Ehrlich, how are you? Welcome to the Coach's Corner.
Coach, I'll take that moniker, but that's going to cost you a lot of friends because you know a lot of people in politics.
Well, that's true.
I think it cost you that many friends. You know that?
That's true.
I love you. My family loves you. We go back many years. I'm very pleased to be on your show this evening.
And I'm honored to have you. So let's get to it. From an administrative standpoint and from a fan's perspective, where are we in terms of sports now? Doing uncharted waters, this pandemic, where are we?
Yeah, Coach, we're afloat, and it's hurting a lot of people. You know, I have a really highly sought after junior quarterback in high school, Josh,
yes.
And I have a kid playing two sports in college, Drew, at Washington and Jefferson. So this has really struck our family hard. It's hit a lot of families hard. And not just families of kids who are going to go on to play in college. It's just, you know, the average kid who loves to play the sport. High school may be his or her last organized sport activity in their lifetime. But
mm-hmm.
It's nevertheless real and important. And you know, the kids are suffering. There's no doubt about it. We lost spring sports. We've now lost fall sports. Now, whether the fall sports are actually going to come back in the late winter, early spring is something being discussed here in Anne Arundel County. But the bottom line is when you impact so many kids in such a negative way, both in the classroom and extracurricular activities, there's no upside to this. The faster we can get back to a sense of normalcy, the better. And what's, again, we're trying to stay away from the politics here, and I certainly will, but again, what's frustrating, I think, to a lot of parents who approach me is that, you know, they wonder why something can't be worked out with regard to in-person classroom activity and scholastic sports, given the fact that kids this age, high school kids and younger, are just not at risk. You know, they're just not
mm-hmm.
at risk. We know who generally the at-risk populations are, those with pre-existing conditions, obviously those are my dad's and mom's age. You know, we know we need to take care of those folks. We know that. They're at risk by definition. But 16-year-olds healthy, you just hoped that more school districts would be innovative, and at least in Maryland so far that's not the case.
Looking at the professional level, and we all know that it's a different animal because of the resources.
Yes.
But the
yes.
NBA, Governor, they seem like they've got it right.
Yeah.
With that bubble.
Yeah, and baseball might have it wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. But you know what, Coach? Again, I'm very hesitant to make judgments. I guess I just did with regard to the kids. I'm really hesitant to make judgments since we're operating in territory, one, we've never operated under, two, an invisible enemy here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's – the leagues are going to go and do their thing. They're going to make some right calls. They're going to make some right calls, right and wrong calls. You're right. So far, the NBA appears to have made the right call. Major League Baseball, not so much. And obviously, America's pastime is baseball, but its favorite sport is football. Mm-hmm. And so the real test is going to be in the fall.
And you being a former football player at the high school level and at the collegiate level, I'm looking and I'm saying, how in the world with the numbers, you know, you're talking about 22 players on the field, contact, hitting,
yeah.
You know, perspiration,
everything. You do in football,
everything.
Sweat, yeah.
Right. How can they pull it off?
Well, I guess you have to finish that question. How can they pull it off without a lot of people being infected? And then, you know, Coach, then I guess we've got to come to grips with what does that mean? Is it a simple infection? If you're young and healthy, a simple infection almost always is pretty much a non-event. Is it a hospitalization? Is it a death? You know, again, there's three categories here. We tend to get confused by the news media as far as what an infection means, because in most cases you could be asymptomatic with an infection, particularly young people. So, again, these are all issues for the NFL. They certainly have access to the best physicians in the world, the best athletes in the world, and you hope they get it right. But clearly, as you see from the NBA, as you see from hockey, as you see from baseball, not having fans in the stands, not having that element, you feel cheated. It's just not the same. And again, that's no one's fault. They're doing what they need to do. But not having the fans, not having the excitement, not having, you know, that moment. Even golf, you know, I love golf too, and it's just weird not having somebody sinks a big putt and a big to win a tournament, and nobody says anything.
Yeah,
they're scheduled to have a
major starting tomorrow, correct?
Yeah, the PGA. They moved the PGA to San Francisco. It's going to be the first major of the year, and you know, a lot of us have been watching golf, and we had nothing else to watch, and I'm a golfer anyway. But, again, for those of us who love sports, it's a very trying time. But, again, I keep go back to the high school kids, the college kids who are, you know, losing their junior, senior seasons, losing their ability to make an impact, and the high school kids who really need and maybe come from more limited means, some those who maybe grew up like I did who needed sports to be their ticket. You've lived that with young athletes your entire life. We know the importance of athletics with regard to upward mobility in this society. And we do value sport. We value athletes. We give kids an opportunity to punch their ticket at exclusive colleges because they can play. And that's good. That's a good thing. And when we lose that, it's and again, that's been my life story. You've coached a million kids with that life story. Maybe difficult circumstances, maybe poor kids, maybe kids from a tough family environment. And athletics gives them the means to not just punch their ticket educationally, but punch their ticket in life, become successful, own businesses, and do things in life.
And speaking of that, let's go back and to the origin of Bob Ehrlich growing up right outside of Baltimore, Arbutus, Maryland. As you said, from working class family. But let's talk about the origin of your passion and love for sport. And who were some of your major role models and influences?
I was that working class kid who got just picked out of the sandlot. At the time, Coach, you coach at a school like this. At the time in the 70s, some of the exclusive schools in Baltimore and Washington were starting to give scholarships to quote-unquote non-traditional students. I was one of them.
That's right.
And non-traditional meant that you couldn't pay tuition and your mom and dad were non-traditional meant scholarship is what it meant. And that was the biggest turning point in my life. You know, the ability to attend Gilman and to be coached by terrific teacher coaches, to be influenced by men like you, Coach, who've dedicated their life to young athletes, to be strong male role models for males growing up, and that's an all-male school. I didn't realize the kind of break it was at the time, but my dad said, man, that's where you're going. And it was the biggest break in my life. So I would say I had a fair amount of success in high school as an all-state linebacker, a three-sport kid, and all-metro in baseball and all that stuff, and was able to parlay that into Princeton. And and became captain of the football team at Princeton, both the freshman and the varsity team. In that era, Coach, you recall, there were freshman teams. Freshmen could not participate in varsity athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just the break of my life, and that's why I'm so passionate in my public career and my private giving, just as an adult with regard to young athletes and giving young athletes and poor kids opportunities in life.
Yeah, and let's talk about your dad. I heard one of the greatest stories of a friend of mine who grew up in Baltimore, and he told me that as a youngster, 14, 13 years of age, he and his friends would ride their bikes past the car dealership where your father worked, and he would always come out, he meaning your father, would always come out and talk with them, encourage them. And fast forward, when he was an adult, my friend said that he went to purchase the car, and he didn't have the exact amount to put down on it, and he asked your dad to hold the car for him, and on a handshake, your dad said, "Hey, if you promise to come back Friday, I'll hold it." And the handshake got it done. He came back, but I thought that was very appropriate because that's how you were when I initially met you. You know, my vision of governors and presidents were people that were unapproachable. But you were just a regular guy, you know. So,
well,
and
there's
said,
a short
well, now,
list of governors from Arbutus, Coach.
Yeah, but talk about your dad and his influence.
Well, listen, my dad was a commission-only car salesman, which meant that if you didn't sell a car, you didn't get paid. And there were many months when you were, as he would refer to it, I'm blank, which meant zero. And, you know, being a car salesman in the 70s with the gas shortages and all that, I remember growing up, my mom was a legal secretary, so sometimes she had the only income in our entire family. And I'm an only child, as you know. So my dad just had the heart of gold. He would take in stray animals at work. It was just such a, you know, bunch of characters growing up around that dealership. He's, again, all commission-only salesman. I worked there as a teenager. I was very fortunate to have mom and dad at home. You know, that's why I'm so crazy about the roles of males in the lives of young males, whether it's a father or a mentor. Young boys need male influences. It drives me crazy when I hear people argue to the contrary. You and I know that's crazy. You've lived that as I have. Young boys need dads. They need male influences in their life. And so I had, you know, I hit the lottery. I had a dad. We didn't have much money, but I hit the lottery when it came to mom and dad and unconditional love. And again, I'm trying to replicate that with my family. I've been blessed with two, you know, athletic boys and a great wife, as you know, who's a friend of yours as well.
Yeah.
So, and I know everybody can't have that. And there's such luck of the draw. And I know some kids are grow up in very dire circumstances, but again, particularly with young boys, I don't know as much about young girls, but I suspect it's the same. But with regard to young boys, they need that sense of discipline. Again, we talk about team sports. They need that sense of success they can get from an early age, typically through athletics. They need that male role model to set rules in their life, and it's something I try to talk about a lot. President Obama talked about it as president. President Trump talks about it. Politicians need to talk about this. It's important. In our society, we're losing that sense of the role of fathers way too much, and something that we can't afford to lose.
Governor Bob Ehrlich is in the coach's corner. And Governor Ehrlich, at what point did you make the decision to be a public servant, so to speak? During the introduction, you've worn many political hats, House of Delegates, Congress, Governor. At what point did you make the decision that, hey, I want to throw my hat into the political arena?
Well, Coach, when I realized there wasn't a huge demand in the NFL for a 6 foot, 215-pound linebacker, that was who was running maybe at the most high 4.7. Athletics really molded me. But when I realized the college was the end of, I thought about going to Canada. I'm not sure you even knew that, to play college, maybe go to graduate school and play a year in college up there and maybe try to hook on with the Canadian team. That was a thought during my senior year, but I really busted my knee up pretty bad at the end of my junior year, and that sort of took care of that. So in any event, I found, again, politics had an allure for me, and the allure was the competition. It was not the high that athletics gave me, but it was close. It was that preparation, that discipline, that the fact that it's a zero-sum game, you win or you lose. Again, I'd heard a lot of politics growing up around the dining room table. My mom and dad were influential there as well. But I really found a lot of elements in politics that I found in athletics. But most importantly, the issue of competition. And again, I'm a competitor. I like to compete. I'm teaching my kids to be competitors. I'm teaching other kids to be competitors. And I think that's your answer. It's the element of competition.
And can you just briefly talk about the various offices that you've held, as I mentioned, and talk about the similarities and some differences from being a delegate, congressman, and governor?
Coach, I enjoyed each one. I was a young kid in my 20s. No one thought I had a chance to win that first race. I won by 93 votes my first primary to beat an incumbent. So, again, there's a lesson for all your listeners. Every vote counts. Believe me, I'm walking proof. I won by 93 votes over a three-term incumbent. Mm-hmm. So I went to Annapolis as a young kid, 28-year-old, with regard to politics. I'd never run before. I was treated well. It was really a nonpartisan environment. The Republicans were very weak, very small number of Republicans, but I was treated as an adult, as a capable person. Democratic leadership treated me great. I wasn't a threat to anybody, and I just enjoyed a great deal those first 8 years in Annapolis, learning my trade. When the second congressional seat opened up, Helen Bentley ran for governor, you'll recall. I ran, and when I ran against my classmate at Gilman and Princeton. So it was split a lot of loyalties, Coach, put a lot of friendships to the test. But I won that race pretty handily and really enjoyed my time in Congress. On some important committees, particularly the House Commerce Committee. I was an assistant whip in the House as well. And I thought I'd be in Congress for a long time, Coach, and this is around the time that we became better friends, better acquainted. It was either stay in the House of Representatives for a lifetime or a couple decades at least, gets inside a pretty safe seat, or risk it all going statewide. And again, Bobby Kennedy's daughter was going to be the Democratic nominee, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. She was a sitting lieutenant governor. The Kennedys were going to spend a lot of money in Maryland. And a lot of people thought I did not have a chance, but I thought I had a chance, and I thought we could win that race. So I gave up that safe seat. We won, and obviously spent 4 years in Annapolis and just loved the governorship, loved being able to make executive decisions, having my opinion really count. Governors have big say on how $30, $35 billion is spent, so there's a lot of responsibility. I really enjoy, raising my kids in the mansion with Kendall. She's a terrific first lady. And then, obviously, re-election did not work out so well. It was a tough year for Republicans, President Bush in Iraq. But in any event, it was a terrific, terrific run in politics. I enjoyed every second of it. Very different jobs, two legislative jobs and an executive job. Very different, Coach. When you're in a legislature, either state or federal, people really don't know what you're doing day to day. As an executive, as governor, they know what you're doing by the minute. So
that's right.
Very, very different.
Mm-hmm. And talk about how difficult, and you talk about being competitive, and you speak of loving competition and defying the odds, but you defied the odds politically to be governor of a predominantly blue state. Talk about how you were able to pull that off. And also, the second part of the question, I remember, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I remember where a group of prominent black leaders approached you with an agenda. And they basically said, here's what we're looking for. How many of these boxes can you check off?
Yeah. And Coach, you know what? I was going to be me. I wasn't going to placate certain groups. Although I knew some folks in that group that approached me, we sat down. And I looked at the boxes and I said, you know what? Love that. You know how to think about that one, or not that. And I think, you were obviously involved with me at that time. I think just my honesty, I hope my forthright approach may have won me some fans there, because I wasn't about yes, just to get elected. Mm-hmm. Mike Steele, kind of governor, first African-American elected in the state of Maryland with my running mate. But he was my friend. You know, people thought his skin color was the reason I picked him on the ticket. And as you know this, Coach, that, you know, I was aware of the history, but Mike and I were legitimate personal friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we took that journey. He was a success in his own right, state party chair. And I said, Mike, we got to do this together. And you know, we had worked together for years. We socialized. We were just friends.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody I could trust, and somebody I knew was really doing the campaign trail, somebody who's going to be loyal to the administration. So that just worked out tremendously well. And Mike was terrific. And it was just a wonderful time. But a lot of people thought we did not have the wherewithal to win the race. As you know, at the time, there was a lot of pressure to close Compton. I thought that was a bad move.
Yeah.
We not only did not close Compton, we empowered it and pumped some more money into. You know, Compton historically, HBCUs play a central role. Every college is different, Coach. Every high school is different. You know that. There are certain kids that need to go to a certain school, right?
Yeah.
And I thought Compton had that role to play when it came to Baltimore's middle class, quite frankly. And people that work in labs and firemen and nurses and you know, those jobs, those middle class, those middle class upper echelon corporate jobs. So in any event, I think that got me some credibility in the community. But the bottom line was we were just pretty transparent and tried to be as honest as we could, and we won the race.
And also, let me just go back to your selection of Michael Steele as the lieutenant governor. You set a precedent, because now there is no way you can have a gubernatorial ticket and not have it integrated. And that started with you.
Well, I'll take the credit for that. And I think you're right. I'll take the credit because I think it's deserved. But your present lieutenant governor, Boyd Rutherford, was in my cabinet. And again, someone
great guy.
Worked with a great voice of. Best, I mean, smart as heck, and did a great job for me as a cabinet officer. And so, again, I'm just I'm really happy to be associated with. I see obviously members like Larry Hogan. Governor Hogan was in my cabinet.
Yeah.
It makes you feel really good to see folks that worked in our administration go on to even greater success.
Mm-hmm. What would you say were your two or three greatest accomplishments as governor? And also, what would you say would be some of the things that you wanted to accomplish, but because of
you
politics?
You know the answer to that one, Coach.
Huh?
That's a loaded question, Coach. You know the answer to that one.
Well, hey, I know it, but our listeners don't. So.
Well, I think that because, again, my passion for education and particularly underserved kids, I think charter schools, passing the first charter school bill in the history of the state, getting a little more school choice out there was obviously historic and important. I was very proud of that. Building the ICC, Coach, has to be very near the top here. People said it couldn't be built. I still have people come up to me with tears in their eyes saying, thank you for building that road. It was a hard road to build. It had been on the master plan in Montgomery County for 60 years. And creating a disabilities agency at the state level, we were the first ones ever in the state of Maryland to do that, empowering people with disabilities. Obviously, very, very important to me, someone who's been very active in that community for a long time. And Chesapeake Bay Restoration Act, Coach. The watermen tell me that act really, it didn't start the turnaround of the bay, but it accelerated the turnaround of the bay and the return of, healthier crab population, oysters. And that really makes me feel good. That was a very difficult ball to pass, a lot of compromise, a lot of negotiation. But clearly, I think they're the first four that come to mind right away. As far as disappointment, the answer. Everybody knows the answer. It was, I ran on a platform of slots, gaming.
Yes.
And everybody supported me. Got a lot of support. It was a winner issue, and I believed in it. Adults like to gamble. They do. Adults make adult decisions. They're able to drink. They're able to do a lot of things, and gamble's one of them. So, to me, to be able to come out for a slot bill to help save horse racing in the state of Maryland and horse farms and agriculture and the environment, I thought was just something I believed in, and I thought it was a dead winner politically, and it was a dead winner politically. People agreed with me that a Democratic legislature. Now, Mike Miller, quite frankly, was pretty helpful for 3 years getting our bill passed, but the bottom line is too many Democrats in the legislature were not going to give a Republican governor that bill. So they opposed it and said gambling was awful and slots were awful. And as soon as I was out, boom, they cast full-scale casino gambling. So, again, Coach, it's politics. A lot of people weren't happy we won. I make the analogy, if you have a one-year-old in a sandbox, that one-year-old's been in that sandbox for a couple months, and you put another one-year-old in there, the first one-year-old's not going to be happy. That one-year-old has to share a sandbox. The Democrat establishment in Annapolis hadn't shared for 40 years. So some were not happy I was there.
Wow. We continue our one-on-one with Governor Robert Ehrlich. And Governor Ehrlich, this past Sunday, there was a NASCAR race in New Hampshire. And they had about 7,000 or more fans, not near capacity, but still
really
among the earliest sporting events to allow fans. My question to you is, the Preakness is scheduled in a couple of months, October. And do you believe, or if you were governor, what would you be considering right now as far as letting fans attend the Preakness coming up?
My predisposition, Coach, I'd be very honest with and transparent with the people and say my predisposition is to have a crowd. And I would raise the presumption so that if someone who wanted to go empty would have to overcome that predisposition with me. And once I got by that threshold, the second question would be, all right, what's the number? Whether it's 10,000, 7,000, 20,000, 40,000, I don't know what that answer is, but I would talk to my medical experts. I would talk to all the professionals in that field and figure it out. Again, what I asked the local school boards to do with regard to schools. And, Coach, if I can just go back to that issue for a second, I hate to get away, but it's probably the number one issue that we're facing these days.
Sure.
People talk about the virus, and obviously it's serious, it can kill, but we also know that young people are not at risk. The other thing, Coach, nobody talks about is, you and I have talked about this off air, but the human cost, the societal cost of kids not being in school, the incidence of child abuse, drug abuse, domestic violence, kids with special needs. Kids need to be in school, Coach. They need
kids
to be in school.
Governor, kids need to be in school, but under safe conditions.
Exactly.
And I know you would appreciate this response, but when I I'll use an analogy. I'm coaching, and my job is X's and O's and strategy for basketball. When a player was injured, then yeah. I turned it over to the experts. And in this
yes.
case, it was my trainers. And so
good,
I would never
perfect
play
analogy.
A player
yeah.
unless the trainer cleared it.
Perfect.
What
analogy,
are the experts
Coach.
Saying?
So the experts, you know, in Europe, they're going back to school. And in some school districts, they're going back. You know, and Coach, when I talk about going back to school, I'm not talking about full-time regular. You know, we're talking about in some school districts, they're doing a couple days a week. They're manipulating the times. They're obviously they're distancing with regard to particular classes. That takes a lot of work. You and I know that.
Sure.
But you know, again, it's a very fascinating issue because it cuts across all lines. But you're right. You went to the experts, and I would go to the experts. That was my answer to you. But again, when we look at the entirety of the issue, there are real costs on both sides.
Sure.
And there are real costs associated with kids, you know, not having that human interaction. And there are real costs to parents, particularly poor and working class parents, who need child care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's just so much of a risk, and you're correct. A lot of the research are saying that the young people are vibrant enough or healthy enough
yeah.
to
yeah,
survive
some reason,
it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But however, they are tremendous carriers. And then you've got
yeah.
people who are in their 60s in the classroom. And then you have
yeah,
parents
so,
at home. So that's the risk factor.
And Coach, but that's where the science and the innovation comes in. And a 62-year-old teacher may not, you know, maybe you don't want that teacher in the classroom. That 25-year-old teacher, maybe you want that person. You know what I mean? That's where the science and all the issues. That's why being an executive is so hard, Coach. That's why being a head coach is so hard.
you make
these decisions, right? You're
mm-hmm.
drawing lines.
Mm-hmm.
You're drawing lines. And when you draw a line, whether it's abortion, whether it's taxes, Coach, whether it's the Middle East, you know, when you draw lines, you're going to upset some people. And that's the
yeah.
difference. You asked an earlier question about the difference between being an executive and the legislature. That's the difference.
Wow. I love this conversation because the one thing about Governor Robert Ehrlich, he was always candid and upfront. Now, here's a tough one. Your position on athletes, pro and college, using their sporting venues to articulate political and social messages.
I have no problem with athletes using their celebrity. The issue becomes more difficult for me when it's at the sporting venue because people are tuning in to watch the athlete perform. And so, again, there's certain – and look, again, Coach, you have free speech, right, in our country.
Mm-hmm.
We have free speech. But
mm-hmm.
do you have complete unlimited free speech everywhere you go? Coach, do you have complete free speech on this show?
No.
So again, it's drawing the lines. Again, you want to have people express themselves. I have no problem with celebrities, whether actors or athletes, getting involved in politics, giving their views. It's a free country. That's why we love the country. But I think you have to be pretty careful when it's at the venue in the middle of that game. And that's why you see different lines being drawn
mm-hmm.
now.
You know, Governor, I think that if it's disruptive to the actual game itself, the competition, that's
yeah,
one
thing.
You saw
the Harvard-Yale game last year.
Yeah. But if it's before, like a Kaepernick situation, and I think that he is very misunderstood by a portion of America. And when you have an audience, I believe that if you're Muhammad Ali or any LeBron James, when you have an audience and a platform, then you've got to use that for the betterment of society.
And Muhammad Ali used it, but not at the fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting time, Coach, I have to say. I think that we also have to be very careful about demonizing the people who protect us.
No, and again, I agree. But we also have to look. I know that Governor Bob Ehrlich, your 4 years, if you would not allow your police or law enforcement agency or agencies to brutalize citizens, and so that's all that I think people are saying.
In places like Maryland, Coach, you know, African Americans, even during segregation, government jobs, particularly police jobs, you know, it's the way people enter the middle class, as you well know.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
I see. You know. It's interesting. I see African American police being yelled at by these white teenagers, and just being abused and cursed at, and it drives me crazy. I hate to see it. It's so disrespectful. You and I have been to, you know, too many police funerals.
Sure. Yeah.
And again, I just hope. I just pray. You know, man. I just pray that we can get to a situation in our society again where we can just talk without worrying about branding someone. This gets to the whole issue of speech. You and I have had this discussion, and we agree mightily on this. This is a free speech country, and people should be able to give their views. I mean, this is what your podcast is about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and when we start demonizing people just for giving their views, that's not the America I want to live in. It's not one country. That's not America at its best. That's America at its worst.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, I think people need to just step back, you know, and take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
And now, how much of an economic impact do you think the state will suffer if?
Well,
your beloved Ravens, Chris, or the Washington football team or the Maryland Terps won't have a seat.
You know, Coach, here's the deal. Again, I keep going back to the kids, and it's defined your life and really defined a lot of my life. The Washington Redskins or football team, whatever the new name is, they'll survive. They may have a bad year. The Baltimore Ravens may have a tough year. You know, with the lack of crowds, we'll still get some TV money. I think of the young athletes at D3 schools, at D2 schools. I think of the kids who play for love of the game, play for the kids who are playing for scholarships, who can't afford to go to school, who are losing their scholarships or don't have access to the playing field these days. I spend a lot more emotional energy caring about kids who don't make a couple million dollars a year.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Again, I'm not unsympathetic. As you know, I know the leadership of the Ravens, class people, all. And I'm a huge professional football fan, professional sports fan. But again, I think of the kid, you know, who from tough circumstances and is going to a D2 school and is getting a break and is meeting people and has tuition paid for, and now. They can't compete. That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's extremely tough. And
so
you know,
I'm reserving my emotional my sympathy quotient for the young people. Again, I understand that, and you and I also understand at some point we're going to return to pretty much normal. The stadiums will be full. The ratings will be up, and you and I will be talking about Cover 2 and why were they in that coverage and in that situation and all that. But there's so much negative impact on young people these days. We need to really pay attention to this.
Yeah. And speaking of negative impact on young people, just a while ago, very tragic situation. And I was very pleased to see that you were part of a commission to investigate that terrible, tragic situation over at University of Maryland College Park where this young student athlete died on the football field.
McDonough kid.
Yeah, talk
coach,
about that.
You know, as a coach, I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
I've never been a coach outside of youth sports, but
mm-hmm.
you know, you've worked kids hard in sprints, I'm sure. You've seen kids drag their butts dragging, right, after
mm-hmm.
practice, and
sure.
I'm sure you've yelled at kids and all that. So, again, this was a very tough situation with a kid who's a terrific player. I know the family. He actually played against my son. I think Gilman McDonough rivalry was a great rivalry in Baltimore, as you know. So
mm-hmm.
I thought it was a good commission. Some of our recommendations were not listened to. I thought it was a really high-powered commission with people who really knew what they were talking about. It's a great experience for me. But again, politics tended to interfere with our report. And again, too often, we're talking about a young life here. So it was just a terrible tragedy. Whenever this occurs, it's as someone, you know my relationship with my dad and how much I love my kids.
Sure.
I know your situation. You can't put into words. You can't put into words how you feel when these deaths arise, and they do arise from time to time in high school. Sometimes even youth sports.
Mm-hmm. There's and I don't know how much you went through this when you were in office in Annapolis, but there is a current lawsuit between the state and the historically black colleges and universities about funding, duplication of programs. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Coach, you know, that was a box, wasn't it? You early referred to those boxes. But, you know, filling those boxes for me, you know, I'd grown up when Morgan was a power. I'm a West Side kid, so I knew all about Compton. HBCUs have played a huge role in higher education in Maryland forever. So for me to fill that box was easy. And as you know, our record was full funding. And not just full funding, but we were able to save a school named Compton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Coach, you know what? It's a pet peeve of mine, and I know you agree with me, but we funded their new gymnasium, which is absolutely beautiful, and I wasn't even invited to the opening.
You beat me to
I was
the
that
punch. Once again, politics. I mean, can we ever get to the point of right is right and wrong is wrong?
I tell you, I
went off, as you know, because you did so much for Compton and that campus, building that wonderful athletic facility.
Beautiful, beautiful building.
And they didn't invite you to the opening.
Yeah, that was. I got to tell you, not a lot of things hurt my feelings. That one did. Because as you know, you recall, I took my... then Drew, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, we would go to Compton games.
Yeah.
We would go to Compton games.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that was a bummer.
Yeah. And man, look, I would be remiss to tell this story. Leonard Hamm, Commissioner Hamm, is a dear friend of mine, like a brother. And I interviewed him, did a fantastic interview with him a couple of weeks ago, and he shared a story when he tragically lost his daughter, that you were out of office then, but you made sure you got in contact with him and sent your personal condolences.
He's a good man, first. Dedicated man. And then you see this kind of tragedy again. Again, Coach, we just talked about it. You see the loss, that kind of loss. You can't know how someone feels as much as you want to empathize. But when you see good people down like that, a terrible loss,
mm-hmm.
you just want to reach out. You want to touch them.
Mm-hmm. Have we seen the last of Bob Ehrlich politically?
Coach, I don't know. I don't know. There may be some opportunities in Washington. I don't know. But you and I'll tell you one thing. If I'm coming back, you'll be the first to know.
And now, I don't want to put it
after
out there.
After the First Lady, of course.
hey, look, Governor, I don't want to put it out there, but, in 4 years from now, 2024, a Hogan Ehrlich ticket sounds pretty good.
Coach, we'll talk. Maybe you got the wrong order there. We'll talk.
let me just say this. Finally, we got a couple minutes left. But let me say this, Governor. I've talked to a lot of people, and, a good buddy of mine had a saying that every white face you see is not your enemy, and every black face you see is not your friend. And I kind of flipped that, and I would say that every Republican that you see is not your enemy, and every Democrat you see is not your friend, especially on the state level. But when you hear, and I'm being real, when you hear uninformed people say, well, Bob Ehrlich is a Republican and all Republicans are racist, how do you, what is your reaction to such foolishness?
I have a good answer that a lot of people don't have, because I get to say, look at my record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Coach, you start getting that argument, and you say I'm not a race. I mean, you can't win. You can't win that argument. It's rhetorical, right? I'm not a race. You're a race. It just drives me crazy. But Coach, let me just kind of close on this note too.
Sure.
One of my loves of athletics is the fact that it's merit based. I'm watching right now, half white kids, half black kids, for Broad Neck High School in the 707. My kids grew up. I grew up black kids and white kids and all three sports and all that. And Coach, you know what? I mean, when kids do that, they're not racial. They're not racial. They don't think along those lines. They would never say something like that. The kids of other races are their best friends. They compete. They socialize. They go out. They date. That's the great thing about sports. It's merit-based. It's not about this race or that race. It's about who can hit a curveball. Who can hit the 20-footer?
Can you play?
Who can lead that team down the field? And that's what's so – and young kids learn this. My kids, they don't think race. I know – I'm not – I live in the real. I came from Arbutus. I'm not talking about some. I live in the real. What came from the real world? So to see how my kids have been raised in athletics and how race is, it's irrelevant. That's not how you think.
Absolutely.
If you're good, if you're a good guy, by the way, that counts. If you can be counted on, that counts.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a liar, that counts. Mm-hmm. If you're a great teammate, that counts. So, again, it's the reason I love sports so much. It's merit-based.
Your beloved Ravens, if there is a season, what's the limit?
MVP,
baby. Is the sky the limit?
The MVP, he's a pretty great kid, that quarterback. Jackson.
Yeah, but you got to get through Kansas City.
He's a great kid, too.
Got to get through Kansas City.
They got a pretty good quarterback, too, by the way. But, We've had some really good signings. We've had some really good drafts last couple of years. Ravens are loaded. And I would say I think they're two of the best teams in the league, Ravens and Kansas City.
Wow. Well, look, I always let my guests use the last minute or so. We call it parting shots, words of wisdom. And before we do, I just want to thank you for being one of the greatest human beings that I've encountered, especially in a political arena. I've often said that, Bob Ehrlich, you're too honest and you're too upfront to be a politician. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but, man, I just love you, and you're my brother.
Let me just say this. One of the things that's driving me nuts today is everybody drawing lines, racial lines, other lines. In politics, when you make a decision, you're going to upset some people. You're going to cost yourself some friends. And if, by the way, if you do cost yourself some friends, they weren't your friends in the first place.
That's right.
So folks in the black community, when I first ran, more than a few came out for me, and that was not cool. That was Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, and the Republicans are racist, and Democrats own this seat, and who in the hell are you? And the person I'm talking to right now, Coach, took that. You took that for me. I know you did, and I know that cost you. It cost you people yelling at you, people calling you all sorts of bad names and crazy names and racial names, and you hung tight. And that's the other reason we've been friends over those years. I know that was not a costless proposition for you. And that's why we love you. And I have other friends that fall in that category too, Coach, but that's why we love you. Because it wasn't costless for you to say on the air, I like Bobby Ehrlich.
Yeah. I remember when you were governor and you came on our show, the morning show with Larry Young and I, and you were taking calls. And a wise guy called up and said, does Coach McAdams work for you? And you said, no, but I think it's a pretty good idea.
That shut him up, didn't it?
That sure did. Hey, Governor, thank you so much, man. And
love you, Coach.
And love you back. And let's get together when this thing flattens out and break some bread. I'm
you
in pretty good
right.
shape now, man. I can go jogging.
Listen, you're in great shape. And by the way, that 90-year-old U.S. Marine father of mine sends his great love to you as well, your biggest fan. So.
No question. Governor, thank you so much.
Take care, Coach.
All right. And, folks, that was the 60th governor of the state of Maryland, Governor Bob Ehrlich. And I hope you enjoyed this visit from Governor Ehrlich. And boy, next week in the Coach's Corner, we've got some shows lined up for you. We've got one of the greatest basketball players in the history of D.C. visiting the Coach's Corner. And I'm talking about Dave Bing, Hall of Famer, former mayor of Detroit. We've got his teammates coming, Roy Monk Wilkins, Ollie Johnson, and others, Mr. Hicks. And so you don't want to miss In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner coming up next week. And I want to thank Horton's Funeral Service for sponsoring this show. They're located 600 Kennedy Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. Their number is 202-829-9000. As for my friend, my brother, he is Randolph Horton. And I want to thank the African American Athlete.com and Rick Hampton Sr., my producer, for making this show possible. If you want to get this interview and others, just visit the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. And again, want to thank Governor Ehrlich for joining us here in the Coach's Corner. And you never know who may visit and step in the Coach's Corner. So, as always, make good decisions, because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. And we'll see you next time.
You'll listen.